Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's E-V-A-L-Y-N-N-E, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, you're listening to Evelyn Charmer on UK Health Radio. My special guest this week, you might remember, because he's been on the show before. This is Simon Preston. And if you recall, he was on a few weeks back and he was talking about neurodiversity in the workplace and a lot of the amazing work he's been doing on that. But also he talked about the death of his daughter, Bethany, when she was three. So I'd like to welcome you back to the show. Thanks for coming back on, Simon.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to have returning guests. And you've although it was only a few weeks back that we chatted on the show, there's been a lot of developments in your world, and I thought it'd be a really good opportunity to get you on to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes, but as usual, we'll start with gratitude. Always a good way to start a day. So I'm grateful for water. And we're recording this on Monday, the 18th of July, 22, and the UK is basking in unprecedented temperatures, which is both wonderful and hideous at the same time. And yeah, without water, where would we be? Where would our animals be? Where would our plants and trees be? So, and our soil. So I'm just really grateful for water. What about you?
Well, I'm, as always, I'm grateful for my family, really, that I've got such a supporting family. We all help each other, and you know, a strong family is a firm foundation. So I'm really grateful for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree too. I'm very grateful for mine. And I know that we talked a lot about your oldest daughter, Bethany, who died when she was three last time. So I'm just checking in. How are you and how was the family?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Yeah, the family are doing good. We're sort of winding down for the summer now, and the school holidays start, and Sophie's going to be off school for a bit. And yeah. Yeah, it's just going to be nice to spend time with the family, and yeah, things are good.
It's so important. Okay, well, let's get into it then. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, which I find really exciting, is that you've recently won an investment from something called The Big Pitch.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
So tell us about The Big Pitch, first of all.
Well, The Big Pitch is a pitching competition which is run by Anglia Ruskin University. And what they do is invite people to, and students to put a business idea forward and pitch it in a 60-second video is the first round. And then after that, if you get through to this, to the boot camp, which is the top 20 ideas go through to boot camp. You go through some intensive business planning, strategy training, and so on. And then you have to do a 3-minute pitch in front of the judges. And then the top six then go through to the grand finals. And I mean, my video, when I look back at it now, it's very much thanks to Sophie, actually, because Sophie taught me the technical skills to be able to make one of these videos. And I was surprised to get through to the semi-finals, and I was happy just to be at the semi-finals. So when I actually got through to the grand final as well, it was amazing. It really was. And getting through to that grand final and putting my business idea forward, I managed to get investment as well as membership to the Federation of Small Businesses. So I was absolutely delighted, and it made my confidence shoot up significantly.
Oh, that is just such a brilliant, heartwarming story. I'm so happy for you. And when I saw the photo that you posted on LinkedIn of you, getting that, at the final ceremony, I'm assuming the photo was it?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, you just looked so proud, and you should be. But it sounds like quite a process. I suppose boot camp. How was that?
I loved it, actually. Although I did find it, I had my challenges with my social communication. So pitching was certainly something that I originally found very difficult. But the support I have in terms of the mentoring and just general support, really, and camaraderie with all the other participants as well, has really made a big difference. And just overcoming some of the sort of challenges I have, and experiencing and feeling successful in doing that, it's done a lot for me. It really has.
Yeah, because the title we used for your show that you came on before was "I'm Not a Failure," and we talked a lot about the impact of the death of Bethany on your mental health and on your feelings as a man and a father, and how you then spent many years trying to prove yourself, really. To hear that you've been through the process of the big pitch and you've overcome your own challenges, have been neurodivergent yourself, and you've managed to get to boot camp, and then you did your 3-minute pitch, which sounds a bit Dragon's Den.
it felt a bit like that, but I saw it much more as a fun opportunity, really, in that some respect. Brilliant. Because just to get to the boot camp for me was my aim, and when I got there, it was kind of just enjoy the whole experience of it, learn as much as you possibly can from it, and have a go and see what happens, and. So I did. And although preparing for a 3-minute pitch was really difficult, but I did at one point forget my lines a little bit. But according to some of the other participants, said that it looked like a tactical pause that was actually very well timed.
And I was thinking, you styled it out then.
Yeah. So when getting through to as one of the six to go into the grand final, it was. As far as I was concerned at that point, it was nothing to lose and everything to gain. And it does, like you're saying, about the reinforcing to me that actually I'm not a failure. When I've doing things my way and I have the autonomy and control over what I do, I can actually achieve quite a bit. And so it did sort of remind me that I'm not a failure, actually. I can do really, really well with this.
Oh, and we'll talk about what the pitch was in a minute, but how inclusive did you find it in terms of, you're a great advocate for neurodiversity in teams and in the workplace. So how was it as pitching your business idea, how inclusive did you find the whole process, really, from beginning to end?
I actually found it very inclusive. I mean, for the first round in particular, when you're creating your video, you do it your way. And you've got plenty of time in which to do into creating it. And I did a lot of takes on there. And you can imagine I've got quite a big blooper reel as well, really, from it. So
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I probably won't show that one. But, the thing it was is that I had the space and the time to produce something and look back at it, and when I was happy with it, then I submitted it. In terms of the boot camp itself, what was I thought was, for me, was how quickly my anxiety levels dropped when I first got there because of the way that everybody were. Because I had a sort of a perception, should we say, first starting, that, you know, this is a business boot camp. Everyone's going to be rather cutthroat, you know, trying to trip each other up. And it was completely the opposite. You know, completely the opposite. In fact, everybody was really interested in each other's ideas. Everybody was sort of asking questions out of interest, you know, not to try and trip anyone up, but out of interest that made you think deeply, more deeply about it. You know, the whole business plan and financial forecasting side of things. I thought that was very good, actually, because you didn't need to do that for the semi-finals because it was just the pitch, but you do need to do it for the grand final. So having that information beforehand actually then allowed me to sort of the space and the time. I had a good week and a bit to produce a business plan, produce a financial forecast, and ask questions as well. We had opportunity to meet with one of the mentors just to go through it before we submitted it. And I thought it was really, really inclusive. And what was particularly good about it is the fact that it's everybody who had the same opportunity. So it wasn't specifically a support just for me as a neurodivergent. You know, everybody, it was designed for everybody to have that kind of opportunity and, you know, fit in. And it never really, whenever I feel like I'm not got a label hanging on me, I know that that's the environment. It's an inclusive environment.
Lovely. And that's what you're all about, Simon, isn't it? That's what, yes, all of your work is about. It's about inclusion versus integration. Thank you.
Yeah.
So you won the investment from the big pitch. So what will you be using that for? What was your pitch?
Well, my pitch is for my business, Embrace Neurodiversity. And it started off, because it's changed a bit now, but it started off with the framework that I developed through my MBA, and where a team is able to analyze their team strengths and weaknesses and then cross-referencing that with their neurodivergent person's talents and their challenges. So ultimately, it's about sort of not just making adjustments for challenges, but also the talent management side of it, how to best utilize the talent so that way everybody achieves and everybody is able to benefit. And yeah, I mean, since and that was what the pitch was about, but since then I've and because one of the prizes was the membership to the Federation of Small Businesses, what that allowed me to do was meet lots of business people and talk about neurodiversity and what to do, etc. And actually also, more importantly, listening to them and what their understanding of neurodiversity is, how they currently work with people. And it really sort of allowed me to sort of think about more deeply of, okay, I can see now where my framework fits. It definitely fits better as an induction program. And then there's also wider things like developing understanding of inclusion and integration, understanding of social model of disability and medical model of disability, the difference there, and also the difference between leadership and management. So three real key areas there that have come through that I'm now working on designing a diagnostic assessment. Yeah, it's making me rethink quite a few things at the moment.
Fantastic. That's a perfect place to break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, you're listening to Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And I've been talking to Simon Preston about being one of the winners of this year's Big Pitch. So welcome back, Simon.
Thank you.
So we've been talking about the Big Pitch and your amazing, you know, experience of that. And I'm also interested in something else that you do. You're a community partner. for something called Neurodiversity in Business. So tell us about that. What does it involve for you, and what does Neurodiversity in Business, what are their kind of aims and objectives?
Well, Neurodiversity in Business was launched at the Houses of Parliament this year on the 22nd of March, and by the CEO, Dan Harris. And the aims really is to help and support businesses in becoming more neuro-inclusive. And it involves a number of partner organisations that are they're all working towards that particular aim.
Sounds really good. So it was launched in March in the House of Parliament, 22nd of March, you said. So who was involved in that from an MP kind of perspective? Do you know?
I believe it's, it was Kwasi Kwarteng who sort of led on it, but it also had Matt Hancock backing up as well, because he has his dyslexia focus as well. And yeah, so it was actually given quite a bit of support at from MPs. There are also some high profile neurodiversity people, like Professor Amanda Kirby, Dr. Nancy Doyle, and it's got a good backing balance of business focus as well as academic focus, and that's, you know, gives a really strong knowledge base on how neuroinclusive strategies can be used to improve opportunities for neurodivergent employees.
Oh, I mean, it's brilliant, because I was talking to somebody earlier, actually, and we were talking about how policy needs to change before anything can change on the ground. So something that's at Parliament level, which is so relevant and so needed, it's really good to hear about that. So look out for that, listeners, if you're interested in neurodiversity in business. I'm assuming they'll have a website.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Do you happen to know what that is?
I believe it's neurodiversityinbusiness.org.
Okay. And so you're a community partner. So what does that mean, and how does that work for you with Embrace Neurodiversity?
Well, it means that the work that I'm doing is in line with the mission, vision and values of Neurodiversity in Business. So it means that, yeah, we're all working towards the same objectives, the same goals, and so as a community partner, I'm out doing this advocacy work, supporting businesses. I'm also starting a focus on education as well, and so it's about sort of doing the stuff really, and helping businesses to move beyond the just good intention and turn it into actual action, positive action, and leading to improved impact.
Oh, you know, it sounds brilliant. And what I really love as well about that is that shared vision, shared values, because I think there's a lot of great work going on in neurodiversity across the world, it seems. I'm coming across more and more and more really good work. But what's brilliant is when everybody's kind of, I hate the phrase, but it makes sense to sing from the same hymn sheet, as it were. And if everyone's working to an agreed set of values that are meaningful, then obviously the impact is going to be greater and more consistent.
And that's the key, is that it's the consistent message across. Yeah. And it is about sort of adopting that social model of inclusion. And I mean, to do that, I was just talking to somebody this morning actually about this, that it's not just a question of here's a model, apply it. There's a lot of education that has to go into it as well.
Yes.
And so it's how do we have that consistent approach to developing that, so that way, you know, businesses can also see the benefits of neurodiversity in the workplace.
You're really onto something here, aren't you? I mean, you've completely taken your concepts and just gone flying with them, and it's so current.
Yeah, it's a lot of the things I do, it is very much based on my own lived experience as well.
Yeah,
but I'm only one person, but there'll be lots of all the neurodivergent people out there that are going through exactly the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And one thing that really drives me to doing this is to not only try and improve conditions as they are right now, but also thinking about all our neurodivergent children in the future. I would love for my two children to be able to go into a world that is fully embracing the neurodiversity that comes to them. And that's something that's absolutely worthwhile. And that's what drives me.
Yeah. I really appreciate you doing the work you do. And I think one of the things is about that inclusivity. There's a lot of us versus them mentality going around as well between, yes, you know, different communities around neurodivergence and neurotypical people, and that there's a lot of not that too. I'm not saying it's all that, but I think it's really refreshing to hear your approach, which is about, well, some of us are neurotypical and some of us are neurodivergent, but put everybody together, that's a neurodiverse community, isn't it?
That's right.
Neurodiversity
is about both neurodivergence and neurotypicals all functioning together.
Yes.
And for the collective benefit. So it is avoiding the us versus them, but with it can sometimes come across as like that because neurodivergent people are a neurominority and are trying to get their voice heard. And I find that it's one of those things where it's not what you do, it's how you do it is really, really important. And because if you've got an us versus them approach to it, then defensive barriers go up. And that's not what we want. What we want is everybody to be able to work together for that collective good. And it does mean that, you know, neurodivergence lived experiences and understanding can help with educating from a neurotypical perspective. But we've got to learn as well.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got to learn from neurotypicals as well. Yeah. So that way, when there's that mutual understanding and starts to form, you get that mutual trust. And that's when things can start to grow.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Well, talking about education, another string to your bow. It all ties in together, but you wear many hats and you've had your finger in lots of different pies. And it seems that these strands are starting to become more cohesive now. That's from my perspective. But you've recently completed a certificate in teaching for neurodiversity, haven't you?
Yes, I did. It was a National College certificate. Fascinating. It really is. Because my whole career has been in education and educational leadership and management. And so seeing this certificate, I thought would be really quite good and have a go at it. So, yes, I just recently achieved that. And I particularly liked the way of a rethink around the language of how to describe this neurodivergence of a student. So it was from changing from a poor niche construction, which is more focused on what they can't do, to sort of the positive niche construction of actually this is what they can do, and trying to see the positive of every situation.
Yeah, and it's the strengths, isn't it?
Yes,
it's the strengths. I mean, in the school that I worked in as an assistant head at the special needs school, each child that came in was kind of assessed by us, and including speech and language, OT, all sorts of different things went into that. But it was very much of we created what we called a student passport, which was very much based on I can do these things and I need this support to do that.
Yes.
So it was very much not ignoring the challenges of the child, but I can avoid that challenge if you help me with this was the kind of solution focused approach. So it sounds like it's based on a similar kind of model. Yeah.
And it fits in very nicely with that systems thinking approach that I was working with as well with my students. And thinking about how you could utilize the strengths of one learner to help with the challenges of another one. And yes. I had a dyslexic student sat next to an autistic student, and their strengths certainly helped the other person with their difficulties, and they both did, you know, performing quite well because they worked together as a team.
Absolutely. I was talking to Rory Fulton recently from Autism Wellbeing CIC, and they term that coalition partners. So collaboratively working together, they call that coalition partnering, which I thought was a great term. So what's the plan to take forward the certificate in teaching for neurodiversity? How can you use that in your work as a, you know, as an educator?
Well, aside from how it can influence my own lesson planning, as a lead practitioner, I could then potentially be bringing that into the organisation. And what I would certainly be looking at, which is something I started looking at anyway, was how IEPs are translated into the context of the lessons.
Did you say IEPs?
Yes.
So explain to our listeners what you mean.
Individual educational plans. So these are very seemingly quite generic documents and are sort of very much about the individual. But with neurodiversity being very much about the context that person is in rather than what that individual finds difficult, you know, it has to be translated into the classroom. So what I mean is, if I have a student who is who's dyslexic, there's a generic information there, but what they find challenging, they may not actually find challenging in the context of the lesson I teach because of the subject. So, but there are other things that person might find challenging. So I would be more sort of using that as a basis to start a conversation with that student. And then once having that conversation with that student, you can sort of gain a bit more understanding of what they will find difficult in your subject, but also what they would find would work for them. And the way that the lesson itself is taught.
Yeah.
And then what support is needed around that.
Again, it's coalition, isn't it? It's collaborative. It's working collaboratively with people. Well, I think I said that wrong. Working collaboratively with people rather than doing two. And you and I were speaking the other day about Roger Hart's ladder of participation.
Yes.
Which is a really old model, but still stands today in terms of, you know, how much you involve people in the decisions and choices that affect them.
Absolutely.
And how someone is taught. They might not have much self-efficacy when it comes to deciding what they're taught, because there's curriculums that teachers are bound by, aren't they, etc. But how you're taught, how you learn, I think it's really important that people are engaged in that conversation from the start.
Yes, definitely.
So that barriers to learning can be, you know, moved and shifted and overcome and diluted for people. Yeah. We're going to break for some more music and ads, and then we'll come back and continue this chat. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, welcome back, listeners. Hope you're not all sweltering out there. We're recording the show today on the 18th of July. So by the time you hear this, we might be in thunderstorms. Who knows? But we're having unprecedented UK weather at the moment. So I hope everyone's dogs are nice and safe and cool, and everyone's children and parents and grandparents, that everyone's staying safe and you know, making sure that they're staying cool in the heat. I've been talking to Simon Preston, and before the break, we were talking about a certificate in teaching for neurodiversity that Simon's recently been awarded and how that can help with coalition collaborative type working in the classroom or in college or indeed in university. So, Simon, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Simon, talking about education, what do you think would help teachers be more inclusive in the classroom?
your lesson planning tends to be a lot more tailored towards the majority who are neurotypical. And so what then that forces teachers to then do is look for strategies, sort of like bolt-on strategies, if you like, to trying to integrate their neurodivergent learners into the lessons. And that's not necessary. That's not inclusion, because you're trying. What teachers are trying to do there is integrate neurodivergent students into a neurotypically designed lesson.
Yes,
which is a lot harder to do because if you think about the additional resources, the additional work that has to go into place, you're almost doubling up lessons planning. It's a lot harder to do than inclusion would be. So actually looking at lesson planning from a different perspective that actually tailors for everyone is a conversation worth having. And I know that teacher time is absolutely precious. And I think that if teachers get their heads together with this and discuss this, they crack it. They really would. But it's giving teachers the time to do that. So, I mean, an example would be different color paper. If you've got a student in your class who is dyslexic and requires a different colored sheet of paper, you know, you can end up getting white paper for everybody. And then you have to go and make a special trip to the photocopier to get that single yellow piece of paper. You know, one way of doing it, and I know this is very, very simplistic and it can be a bit more complicated than this, but why not get them all the same color sheet of paper?
Yeah.
You know, just make one bulk order and have it all on yellow paper.
Yeah. And yeah. I've also worked with students who've got eye issues and they've needed blue or green paper as well. So you've made your point very well there. And I know that this is something that else that you're driving forward, and you're proactive in another piece of work project, which is neurodivergence at the heart of knowledge exchange. Which is kind of what you're talking about here, isn't it? It's about getting professionals together to discuss strategies, resources, planning, you know, all of that stuff. So tell us a bit more about neurodivergence at the heart of knowledge exchange.
There's two arms to it. There's one to for business, and the other is in education. So both in a nutshell, would be about getting together neurodivergent people with neurotypical people to have a conversation in a safe space. But the format isn't going to be everybody in a Zoom meeting for 1 hour listening to one person talk, because nobody wants to listen to me for 1 hour talking. So, you know, so it's a question of using the breakout room functionality, etc. But it's ultimately about developing that shared understanding, that quality of conversation, which helps educate everybody as to what neurodiversity is and how it can benefit, and also strategies. So that way, neurotypical people, neurodivergent people can raise questions. I'm having difficulty with this, and you know, some people may have had a similar experience, an experience of success, and can say, well, I tried this and it worked there. It might work for you. So it's to get those quality conversations going in a safe space. The education one is what I'm calling at the moment a neuro teach meet.
I like it. Snappy. Yeah, just what it says on the tin.
Exactly. That won't be till September, obviously, because everyone's away now and having a break. But again, it's more of a sort of sharing of strategies and what's worked and what doesn't work as well, because it's great to learn and reflect from everything in a safe environment. So it's getting the conversations going is the ultimate aim of neurodivergence at the heart of knowledge exchange.
How do you see them working then? Are you thinking on video chats, or how do you see these growing?
At the moment, it'll be through video conversation. It'd be great to get people together because that will just bring a bit of atmosphere that you don't get in a Zoom room. And it'd be great if I was able to do regionalized neuro teach meets, regionalized business network meetings eventually.
But
I want to start the conversation and actually raise awareness that neurodiversity exists as well.
So where are you at with that then? At what point are you in the project?
I was doing a test event of it, actually. Yeah, so I got a number of neurodivergent and neurotypical people that I've known for a while together. So I'm just testing it out because I want to make sure that it's inclusive because I need to model it.
I mean, I'm saying, you know, are you? But I do know about that because I've been invited, and I'm very much excited to have been invited, and I will definitely be there to be part of that conversation. And I'm also aware, having worked in schools and alongside schools for a long time, of the precious, you know, time element. But I believe that if you can make time for quality, and you said quality conversations, and I think that's the key. It's not a moan off, you know, it's about actually coming up with solutions, sharing good ideas, you know, discussing things you might not have thought about, or you might have thought about but didn't know if there was a model out there and someone else knows there is, and things like that. And it's about sharing good practice at the end of the day, by the sounds of it.
I mean, this is the thing with strategy as well, because it's not when we're talking about inclusion in the workplace, it's not just a top-down strategy for inclusion. You know, you've got to develop that emergent strategy as well, because there are actually some very good ideas and thoughts from the ground as well. I mean, I've worked with a few people, neurotypicals, who have actually a very good grasp of neurodiversity, just because of their experiences of working with neurodivergent people. And they've developed their own strategies, but those voices haven't yet got a voice.
Yeah, which is why it's important for it to be an open forum for everybody, no matter what how your brain processes information. Is almost, you know, it's not the reason for being in the meeting. It's about everybody, isn't it?
That's right. We're a human race. We're a team.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. We're a team. I love that. You could just call it "We're a team." Okay. Well, I think that's all of my questions for today. It sounds like you're doing an enormous amount of really positive and amazing work, some groundbreaking stuff, Simon. So on behalf of everybody listening and myself, you know, well done, and a massive thank you for the work you do. And before you go, we talked right at the start of the show a little bit about the us versus them mentality and stuff, and inclusion, integration. Some of these words can be really confusing. The language, you know, around this sort of stuff it can be really confusing. So what, for our listeners, I'd really love it if you can sum up what you think the difference is then between integration and inclusion.
Integration is about looking at strategies to fit someone into a, if I talk about neurodiversity as the field, about strategies that fits a neurodivergent person into a neurotypical environment. But it means that neurodivergent person is not able to be their true authentic self.
Nice. I like the way you've put that.
Whereas inclusion is about how you adapt the whole environment so that way everybody, neurodivergent and neurotypical, can all be their authentic selves.
Love it. Authenticity being a real big keyword of mine. So if it were talking square pegs and round holes, let me just try and visualize this for myself. And if this helps anyone else, brilliant. But if you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole, so say the round hole is a neurotypical environment and the square peg is the neurodivergent person. Integration would be maybe sanding the square peg into a round shape to fit into the round hole, which would be taking away the authenticity of the square peg and changing its shape in order to fit the environment. And if we were talking about inclusion, proper full inclusion, we'd be talking about maybe expanding that environment so that the square peg can fit into it more easily.
That's right.
I think we've cracked it between us.
Yeah. So when the environment's been changed, both the square peg and the round pegs can all fit into it.
Exactly. I love that. Okay. Well, on that very visual note, we're going to end the show. So just going to give a big shout out to your family. And for those listeners who could hear Simon's family in the background. I thought it was actually quite nice to have that. And also probably could hear me swigging water because it is stifling in here. So, you know, a big shout out to your family from all of us at UK Health Radio. And thank you for being guest of the week.
Thank you for having me back.
Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.